You know, when you respond correctly to dumbass questions, that's what happens.
Welcome to the internet's only South Carolina Gamecocks sports podcast that absolutely positively thinks that Mark Burson needs to get out of town and fast. How did they not even score points the other night? That bothers me. I mean, that was the biggest game that we played this week, right?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I pay attention to Gamecock soccer. So, maybe that
Well, it's probably better that you don't.
Maybe that makes me a bad fan and a bad alum, but I'm not going to sit here and lie to people and tell them that I pay attention or care all that much about men's soccer. So,
okay, because men's Gamecock soccer is dark and full of terrors.
Or so the it's women's actually probably a good thing or, that you don't or the women's soccer team, just soccer in general. I mean, I'm not
the women's soccer team is awesome.
That's not my point. That's not what I'm saying, Richard. What I'm saying is I'm not going to sit here and pretend to tell y'all that I pay attention to soccer at all. That's what I'm saying. So I know who the coach is.
You've been on record as a lukewarm soccer person anyways, which is not a bad thing.
I also saw the women. Anyhow, I did see the women's soccer team lost to Clemson today, so they can't be that great. I did see that.
Yeah.
And they got shut out too. Saw that on Twitter.
They did. They did.
Alex, how are you doing?
I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Yeah, pretty much the same here.
And at least, and none of us are wearing something anywhere remotely close to as ridiculous as the Hermes headscarf that Cam Newton was wearing last weekend.
You mean Hawkeye from MASH?
No, no, it's the wolf from Red Robin Hood, whatever it's called.
Also,
all the better to throw interceptions to you, my dear.
Also, the toothache baby from the original Looney Tunes.
Also, holy mackerel, what a reference.
Also, your grandmother, how she dresses.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire when they're going through the makeup session.
Oh, hello! My God.
He should focus more on playing quarterback than
there was a great,
whatever he wants to call that.
There was a great photo going around on Facebook earlier this week when that happened. I guess it was Friday morning. It was a picture of like a Cleveland Browns player from the early 70s who's just like helmet off on the field, grinning, and he has like no front teeth on the top of his mouth, you know? And then it's like football players then versus football players now. And it's like the Toothless Wonder from the 70s, and then it's Cam Newton dressed like a 75-year-old grandma at his press conference. It was hilarious. It was pretty funny. So,
well, very clearly, Cam Newton was not a winner this past week. You see what I did there?
In my book, he's a loser every week.
Okay.
I mean, I just don't like that guy. I think he's a turd. I think he's always been a turd, always going to be a turd.
Well, I mean, it's never going to sit well with us after what happened.
That, and I'm a Saints fan. He's a Panthers quarterback. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not like I ever got over it. It just gave me more reason not to get over it, if anything else.
Fair. So, but he wasn't a winner. He was a loser. Winners and losers. You two, we're going to switch things up a little bit because in true DC3 fashion, I'm still typing away just to make you guys aware of what I'm actually doing. So Alex first, Sam next. I'm going to bring up the rear like I normally do.
Well, I'm going to start with my winner of the week, and that is the University of Central Florida. I know that the Stanford team that they played is not the same team that we're used to seeing, but still being up 38-7 at the half against a Power 5 is pretty impressive. The freshman quarterback put up 347 yards with four touchdowns on 22 of 30 for passing. They are clearly, right now, the best team in Florida and have been for the better part of 4 to 5 years. I know we all agree that they need to be in a Power 5 conference if they want to be in the playoff talks, but I don't think it's too early to put them in those same talks. So UCF is my current winner of the week. My first loser of the week is Pitt. In what should have been a great upset bid over Penn State, the play calling became atrocious. This was a coach who outcoached himself and overcoached himself into a loss. Down 17-10 with less than four to go, they threw a 29-yard pass to get themselves on the one-yard line going in. First play, incomplete pass. Second play, no gain. Third play, incomplete pass. It's fourth and one with under three to go, and you're down seven to the number 13 team in the country. What should you do on fourth and one?
Go for it.
No, they kick a field goal, and the football gods frown on them, and they missed the field goal and ultimately lose 17-10. All that work to get down there for an upset, and they lose 17-10. I don't understand the play calling. So, Pitt, first loser of the week. Second, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this because it was hilarious. Iowa State. Iowa is up 18-17 and is punting the ball back to Iowa State. All Iowa State needs to do is catch the football, get some decent field position, and kick a field goal, and they win. But instead, they muff the punt. And they don't just muff the punt. Two players literally run into each other with no one around. And that's how they muff the punt and end up losing the football game 18-17. So Pitt and Iowa State, you are losers of the week.
The longest football game, the longest college football game in history due to two rain delays, not one, two weather delays, and then it ends in the most our friends over at Banner Society have coined the Iowa State game Elassico in homage to El Clasico. That was a quintessential Elassico. Game day is there. The game takes 9 hours to play, and it ends on a muff punt in which two players run into one another, and the only one around for 15 yards in a halo, one Iowa player. They both run into one another. The ball bounces off the ground, almost literally into the hands of the Iowa player. Unbelievable.
Not great, Bob.
Sam, who are your winners and losers, buddy?
All right, so my winner of the week, and I got to go with Tyson Williams primarily, but then also all of his teammates that represent the Fighting Mormons of BYU. Took down a top 25, I mean, by the numbers, a top 25 squad. I'm not sure anybody that knows about football considered Southern Cal an actual top 25 football team. But at the time, they were number 24. They took down Southern Cal yesterday in OT, clinched the game with an incredible interception in overtime after they kicked the field goal. They won 30-27. For those of y'all who don't remember, Tyson Williams played running back for us for 2 years. He finished the game with 19 carries for 99 yards, and he also had 18 yards receiving. So a very solid game all around for him. Helping his team to a victory over a Pac-12 squad. And I got to say, the Pac-12 is not having a great year so far. They're not doing too hot. Loser of the week. Originally, I put college football referees everywhere. Now, for those of you who don't know, I am a Saints fan. I was PO'd after last year's NFC Championship game for good reason. I am PO'd again today because they again screwed the Saints out of a big play in the Saints-Rams game. So, not just college football referees everywhere, just football referees everywhere. And like I said in my notes, it wasn't just the South Carolina-Alabama game that the officiating was horrible. I think across the board, it's at an all-time low. And it's almost becoming like what you see in Major League Baseball with their umpires. There is zero accountability with these guys. They're just allowed to make terrible call after terrible call. There's no kind of discipline. There's no – I mean, you hear about like one referee getting suspended a year, but it's never – it's not consistent. There's no real accountability. They're just allowed to be terrible week after week, especially in college. And quite frankly, for the SEC and the ACC and all these Power 5 conferences to have referees that are as consistently incompetent as they are, it's embarrassing. It is absolutely embarrassing. And I'm going to comment more on the refereeing later when we talk about the Alabama game. It's certainly not the reason we lost, so don't get the wrong impression here. I'm not saying that they're the reason we lost. But there were several plays that they absolutely just took away. And there were plays they took away from both teams. But, I mean, I wasn't really paying attention to the Alabama side. It was more of, I can name like four or five plays right now that were either big plays or scoring plays that they either didn't make a call or did make a call that they just flat out missed it and impacted the game. But football refs everywhere, y'all are my losers of the week. Every single one of you at the college and NFL level. Every single one.
Don't hate
can
it.
Can we talk about, like, they were there. I mean, and you're absolutely right, because this week, of all weeks, had some pretty bizarre refereeing.
It was bad. Like, it was...
Yeah.
It was bad. The UNC Wake Forest game on Friday, they screwed that game up. UNC should have had 1 second left on the clock at the end. I mean, and not only was it unwatchable, Richard, but they should have had time left at the end of the clock to run one more play, and they didn't get that chance. And by no means am I a UNC fan, but facts are facts. They just screwed the pooch on that, and they didn't even try to get it right. They just ran off the field and said, okay, game over.
Like, same with the Furman Virginia Tech game. Furman had a chance in that, and some phantom holding call on kickoff screwed Furman.
That is exactly where I was going to go. It was that holding call on the kickoff with Furman and Virginia Tech. I mean, shoot, Furman was what? Furman was up 14-3.
Yeah,
yeah. At
late in the third quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And that holding call on the kickoff was just bizarre.
And look, and nobody is sitting here. Well, and I say nobody. 99% of people are not sitting there saying refs need to be perfect. Nobody expects referees to be perfect. It's not going to happen. But the amount of impactful missed calls and or calls that they make these days in games has gotten to a ridiculous amount. Like the amount of wrong decisions they make that directly impact the outcomes of games it seems like to me it's spiking, and it's not going down anytime soon. It's gotten worse and worse and worse every year.
I mean, you make an analogy that translates back into, hey, like, for example, you make anything, whether it's an attorney in the courtroom or a judge determinant on something that is monumentally impactful for, yeah, I know, I'm not trying to equate college football with you know, a speeding ticket or a misdemeanor or whatever it is that it might be. But when you have an absolute ruling on behalf of one independent party and their subjective personal interpretation of what goes on is the linchpin for the eventual thing that affects not just one person, but you know, potentially hundreds, dozens, if not thousands of people. Like, do your job pretty... I mean, yeah, Sam, you make a great point. It's not like that they're... You know, that they're... But do your job.
Yeah, and we can move on from this for a minute because I'm gonna have a more detailed... We actually have a Twitter question about referees, and y'all don't let me forget, I have a pretty detailed argument for how to fix college refereeing. So,
all right,
yeah.
Well, let me turn this totally up on its head and say that while I agree in the fact that Alex is totally right in that Pat Narduzzi and his boneheaded poppycock that happened against Penn State was awful, inexcusable. It got overshadowed by the rambling, traveling wreck of a shit show that is Georgia Tech football this year.
Dude, they might not win a game. They're bad.
They're not very good.
They're awful. And, you know,
they are gonna fart around and make Paul Johnson get up off his couch and say, screw it, I'm coming back.
Well, and here's my thing with Georgia Tech. I think Jeff Collins, he came from where? He came from Temple, is that right?
Temple, yeah. Yes.
You know, and he's kind of a weird guy, as in like he does things differently and he has different kind of pregame routine. And like for example, when they played Clemson that first game of the year, they were literally doing Olympic weightlifting on the sideline before, like doing curls and bench press and squats on the sideline warming up for the Clemson game. Like, they had a traveling weight room on their sideline. Do y'all remember anything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just an example in a long line of things that he's a weird guy, okay? And that's all great. But if you're going to be that guy, you can't lose to the Citadel. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be that weird guy that's different, you need to get results. And you probably need to get results pretty quickly because that whole shtick is going to, you know, get old really quickly with your fan base if you're not winning ball games. Anyway, sorry, Richard. I didn't mean to jump in.
If you want to talk about, like, for example, the man card, let's talk about it in these terms. Anyone that loses to a fake service academy automatically needs to be put up against a tribunal to have their Power 5 status revoked.
So, does this count if you're the South Carolina Gamecocks?
We are grandfathered in.
Oh, okay, so this is 2019.
Because this is a new rule. We're grandfathered in. And also, too, because now, by proxy, Tyson Williams has become the destroyer of worlds.
Right.
All of a sudden.
So is Tyson Williams Galactus Jr.?
He's Galactus-ish.
Is he West Coast Galactus?
Yes.
Mormon Galactus?
Well, he's Mountain Galactus.
He's Mormon Galactus.
Mormon Galactus. I don't know. We'll workshop that.
Okay. We'll come back. Sure. We'll get back to that next week.
It's in beta.
Yeah, it's in beta testing.
Yes. 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 But to flip the switch, the winner this week is Jalen Hurts. And now while I haven't necessarily put forward my opinions on the transfer portal out there for public consumption, I'm really not a big fan of it in general. especially because it looks, it looks, walks, acts a whole lot like unpaid free agency, and it just lends itself more to, if we're going to do this in college football, and we're probably going to get to this at some point tonight, if we're going to just make these kids say, your degree is everything, and you're going to trot Jerry Rice out there on an NCAA commercial and say, 98% of these kids are going to get something way more valuable than a college, than a shoe contract, which is crap, by the way. No, they're not. You get a shoe contract. I'm sorry. Kyrie Irving's not going to trade his shoe contract for his BA, which he doesn't even have. If we're going to do that stuff, we need to honor the kids that are flying across the country, moving their whole families. I'm not trying to bring Ryan Helinski into this, but Jalen Hurts is a prime example. I, for one, the difference between him at Alabama and him at Oklahoma is almost null and void, but the ability to listen, to watch him just be free at Oklahoma, he looks like a different player this year.
Well, he's playing for an offensive genius.
What he's doing is so much fun to watch.
Yeah,
he's up for vengeance,
and he's playing for an offensive genius to start with. I mean,
yeah. and he's playing for himself all of a sudden.
I'll go out on a limb and say there's not a better offensive play caller in the country than Lincoln Riley.
How does Lincoln Riley get wide receivers in not just space? But it's almost like you're on the Mario, that one stupid Mario Kart track, that the really narrow one that didn't have any fences on either side, and it was in space.
Yeah,
Rainbow Road.
That's exactly it. And it's like you're like going up against some person that really knows how to keep the Mario Kart straight. And they use, like, Yoshi's car that's not fast, but they're, like, never going to crash on that course. And they are 5 minutes in front of you. And you're like, what? How does this happen? That's a terrible analogy for me to use for this, but...
Yeah, it is, because Oklahoma's receivers are really fast.
They are. They are really fast, but it's also like they are in space that hasn't even been created yet. They are so wide open. It's wild.
Okay, so I want to go back to my Georgia Tech thing. I said they might not win a game. Well, I'm wrong about that, because they actually have won a game.
They already have one.
They beat.
I wasn't going to do it.
So a couple of things here. Well, okay, so it was fair of me to assume that they've lost all three of their games, considering they lost to the Citadel. Now, granted, they did beat a terrible South Florida team 14-10 last week. The other note I wanted to make is this. They got one first place vote in the ACC media poll preseason.
They did?
They did.
Was it Paul Johnson?
I don't know. No, it was the media poll. They were picked to finish last in the Coastal Division, but they got a first place vote.
Wow. That's somebody at Georgia Tech.
Was it Andy Demetra?
Oh, jeez.
I would take Andy Demetra, even though he's blocked me on Twitter, I would take Andy Demetra over Todd Ellis right now as our play-by-play guy for football. There's no arguing against that. Todd Ellis is terrible at his job. To the 40, the 45, the 50, the 55, the 60. And it happens every week.
He's playing while we're winning.
Not really. Kind of ruins that, too.
Maybe for some people. I like it. I like it when he yells boom.
I would like it better if he yelled boom while he was the color analyst and not the play-by-play man.
I'll give you that.
I'm okay with touchdown Carolina, touchdown whomever.
I just think it would be better if we had like an actual professional play-by-play guy, and he was our color analyst.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea.
And we sent Tommy Moody, is that his name, out to pasture? Or no, Tommy Suggs.
Suggs.
Put him out to pasture. He's been doing this for way too long. But
hey, don't mess with Tommy.
I'm not messing with Tommy. I'm stating a fact, and it's a business decision. This is where having
it's a business decision. Now, speaking of business decisions, let's talk about what the business was last week. And we got given the business by a certain set of six people on the field that were not wearing crimson nor garnet. They were wearing white and black. Y'all, I mean, talk to me here, because being in attendance for this football game, I was pleasantly surprised, despite the fact that everything that transpired, that crowd hung tough. They were there. They were loud. Till everybody kind of figured out that, well, shit ain't gonna go the right way. That crowd was good. They were intense. That was the loudest that football stadium has been in 10 years. And I'm gonna stick my hat on that one.
It was louder than the 2012 Georgia game?
Yes.
I seriously doubt that. I was at that game. There's no way that Bama game was louder than the all-time biggest crowd ever at Williams-Brice. Just saying. Now, granted, I think it was a good environment, but was it even, I mean, officially it was a sellout, but was there even 80,000 people there? Because there were a lot of empty bleachers showing on TV.
82.
That's how many tickets were bought. That doesn't mean that's how many people were there. There was a lot of bleachers showing at kickoff. A lot of bleachers showing in the upper deck.
Well, there were a lot of bleachers showing at kickoff because the sun, it was 3:30 and it was
just saying, it's awful empty.
Degrees.
Awful empty for all those cats to be standing on the roundabouts in the shade. That's all I'm saying. Do you want my actual thoughts on the game, though, instead of crowd debate?
Yeah.
We just got out-talented on Saturday. In the same breath, and again, we'll get to this more later, but in the same breath, we're a bogus holding call on a fake field goal that never gets called ever, and a non-review on the goal line that sent Carolina's play calling into a complete cluster from being tied at 24 at halftime. Now, if we go into half tied with Bama, do we win the ball game? No, probably not. But my point is, the game was much more competitive than the final score indicates. I mean, up through the middle of the third quarter, you felt like physically we were right there with those guys, and then I think we just got worn down. But I think, you know, Helinski looked great. He did not look like a freshman making his second ever start, much less his first start in the SEC. Rico Dowdle looked like a legitimate SEC running back for the first time in a while. Brian Edwards and Shai Smith were incredible. Javon Kinlaw lived in their backfield. He did a lot of good things. I'm really concerned about the secondary. Specifically, Jamias Williams. The kid needs to play better, or they need to get him off the field. I appreciate him coming to South Carolina and being a Gamecock, but at the end of the day, if you're a junior and you're constantly busting your coverage or getting beat in coverage because you're too slow to cover your man, there's got to be a better option. Do y'all remember when we got him and it was considered a big deal that he wasn't going to Georgia? That was a huge deal when he committed to us. I mean, I was like, he was a high four-star prospect. What has he done since he's gotten here? I mean,
he seems to me like he's been something's off. Something's wrong.
Yeah, it's
like
something's off. He's not.
I don't know what it is.
He's not very good. That's what's off. He's not a good football player. That's what's off. I mean,
I think that might be a stretch, but.
Well, when you're constantly falling down trying to cover people, I'm going to come out and say that you're probably not a very good – you're not an SEC-level football player. That's – I mean, to me, that's reality. He hasn't done anything since he's been here to justify all the hype he got coming in or half the hype he got coming in. Yeah, he was hurt last year, but that was last year. I mean – I'm not trying to trash the kid. That's not what I'm doing. I'm sure he's a fine person. But if we want to talk about football performance, he hasn't done anything to justify the hype he had coming in at all. All that being said, I thought we fought. It wasn't the same team we saw last year in that Georgia game where it just kind of felt flat from the word go. You know, those guys came out Saturday pretty fired up and ready to go at them. Now, you know, I just think that Bama's way better than we are, obviously, and that reflected on the scoreboard by the end. But at the same time, I feel like if we play that aggressively and with that kind of mindset the rest of the schedule, we have a chance to win a bunch of football games before it's all said and done. So, those are my thoughts. I don't know whoever wants to go next.
Alex, tell me what's up, man.
I know it would have been awesome for us to win this game, and I know there weren't many of us that expected it to happen, but I really felt like there was some great fight in our guys. The play calling seemed to be a little bit better. And if we play like we did yesterday, I feel like we've got a chance to win a lot of ball games. One of the things I would have liked to have seen more is with Holinsky's arm, I would have liked to have seen a little bit, a few more chances of shots down the field. I know we took a couple. Like, I know Shy made that unbelievable catch in the end zone. We missed Brian Edwards on the deep route that he, was wide open on. And I think we had maybe one more shot down the sideline. But outside of that, the kid's got an arm. We've got to give it a chance to stretch it out. And maybe it was he just wasn't picking those routes, or maybe the play calling wasn't meant for that, but I felt like there were a few more instances where we should have taken shots down the field. I do think that some of the play calling in the red zone was a little suspect. I did not like the hurry up, and I know Sam's going to go into a few more details about refereeing here pretty soon, but I do want to jump on a couple of soapboxes here really quick. Number one, it's what I like to call blue blood officiating. I see this a lot. I've said this before on this podcast multiple times. No matter what the sport is, whether it's college basketball or the NBA or the NFL or college football, the blue bloods of that sport tend to get calls when they need them and tend to not have things called against them when they need a break. This is not me saying the referees lost us the game. Like Sam said, we were out-talented. Alabama was going to win that game, bar none, but I felt like it was a little bit more competitive than the score indicated. A prime example is, the holding call on the fake field goal. Was it a technical hold? Probably. Does that call get called against Bama? Probably not.
No.
Probably not. Does that call get called against Texas or LSU or Clemson? Probably not.
That holding call literally did not get called against Bama on the punt later in the game.
Exactly. And that's my point. And that's my point. When they need a break, they don't get calls.
Right.
When it benefits them, then they do get the call. And you see this across all sports. It happens in basketball. Duke gets calls that, whoever, Tennessee State's not going to get. Back in the 90s, we used to call it the Jordan rule. Jordan got calls that nobody else got. We see it everywhere. Case in point, Sam talked about it during his winners and losers in the NFL. The Saints have gotten screwed a bunch of times. Maybe they just don't like Sean Payton. I don't know what it is. But the Blue Bloods, they get things that normal teams don't get. And it goes back to that accountability with officiating. There has to be something that changes because the entire reason that officials are there is to make sure that the game is played fairly and called correctly. And if you're not doing that because of ticket sales or whatever else, you know, then there's an issue. There was an NBA, there's a retired NBA official who made a great statement concerning quote unquote blue blood calls, where he talked about if there is a foul in a game that happens close by, we'll just say LeBron James. Let's say LeBron and whoever, Tristan Thompson are near each other, and a foul is called, then that official is taught to always give the call to the lesser known player because fans paying $30,000 to sit on the floor did not pay that money to see LeBron get called for fouls. And that has trickled down from the professional level to the college level. And it's gotten to be a little bit ridiculous. Again, that's not the reason we lost the game. Please don't misunderstand me. But there are, I know that there are going to be people that hear this podcast that are probably not Gamecock fans, and they may even be Bama fans, and they'll say, well, I don't understand that. Well, of course you don't understand that because you've been getting those calls always, as long as you've been a fan. And once you reach that quote-unquote blue blood status, then you start to get those calls. Clemson is starting to see the benefits of that now. You know, once upon a time, it was Southern Cal was getting those calls. Ohio State always gets those calls. There are about a group of about 7 to 8 schools. They're always going to get them, but something's got to change. The other soapbox I want to jump on, and this is going to be a super unpopular opinion, maybe even amongst the three of us, but this is something that I have come to believe and kind of gripes me a little bit. This is, and I want to preface this by saying this is not me bashing Will Muschamp, so please don't get on that train. I like Will Muschamp as a head coach. I think he's a good head coach for South Carolina, and I think he has the ability to get it done. He's an unbelievable recruiter. But I also feel like the country and the media and players and, you know, coaches everywhere have gotten fooled by the idea that Muschamp has been able to hide behind the quote-unquote defensive mastermind. So when we have problems on offense, nobody ever looks to Muschamp. Nobody ever says, well, what was he doing there? Because we've always had an offensive play caller because, well, that's not Muschamp's realm. He's a defensive guy. And at the end of the day, I understand the buck stops with the head coach and he is held liable. But when last year, whenever we would have a bad offensive game, we would talk about Kurt, or 2 years ago, we would talk about Kurt Roper. We would never talk about Muschamp. Then when we had a bad game against UVA last year in the bowl, we talked about Brian McClendon. We did not talk about Will Muschamp. So I think it's a little bit, you know, Muschamp, I feel like, has been able to hide behind that a little bit. And I think that he needs to take a little bit more control. I'm not saying he needs to become the play caller, but he needs to have a little bit more hand in the offense and what is going on with the scheme, as opposed to just being dubbed the defensive mastermind and him saying, that's not my world over there. I'm not an offensive guy. Again, I know he's a defensive guy, and I know that when it comes to third and fourth down, he has to say on fourth down, we're going to punt it, we're going to go for it, whatever else. But I think that he may need to start to – he's a head coach. He's a guy. He needs to start taking a little bit bigger hand in what we're doing offensively, and I think for us to be a little bit more successful. Maybe I'm wrong. I know I'm not a football coach. I don't know a whole lot about – you know, scheming and play calling as far as college football is concerned, but this is just an outsider's couch coach perspective. I do think he's our guy. I think that he can do some great things here at South Carolina, but I think that he's going to have to get his hands on a little bit more because obviously the defense isn't getting it done. I mean, our secondary couldn't stop a wet blanket right now. So,
why does he need to be more involved with the offense?
Because I don't think he's involved enough. Because I think that we can't just keep saying that, like, our OC is the problem. Our OC is the problem here. Our OC is the problem there. And maybe that's wrong. And, again, I don't know the answer, but I feel like whenever we have offensive problems, we never look at our own head coach because he's our defensive guy. But our defense is a problem as well. So maybe he needs to be a little bit more involved. And again, I'm not saying I know the answer, and then that may not be the answer. That's just an opinion I have in the present moment.
Yeah. I'm just trying to. But the thing is, I haven't heard any real complaints about the offense in a vacuum the last 2 weeks.
No, not the last 2 weeks. I'm not talking about the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
I guess maybe that last series where before halftime, I thought that was kind of, I thought that was a little poor calling. And I will say the first week the play calling was horrendous. Of course, nobody's going to complain about the play calling against Charleston Southern, but really we have one game to go on.
So it's interesting you say that, because I'm starting to think that McClendon, which in a way, me saying this, it's like, well, why didn't they just start Hilinski to start with? But the way they call that UNC game and the way they called yesterday's game and the Charleston Southern game are completely different. And the only difference between those games is who played quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they have way more faith in Hilinski than they ever had in Bentley at QB.
And maybe that's – yeah, and that could be the case.
Now,
and we've talked about too that Muschamp may be loyal to a fault. I hope that McClendon ends up turning out to be an incredible OC. I know we were singing his praises as soon as he became OC, but it just seemed like as the season went on toward the end of the year last year, our play calling kind of went down. But we did dial it up against Clemson, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, no, you have an excellent point, and it's.
I think he needs to be as involved.
Not to belabor the point, we have bagged on T-Rob, we bagged on B-Mac, we bagged on Will Muschamp at certain points. I think that for what it's worth, there's a lot of credit to what your point is, that at the end of the day, yes, the best head coaches in college football put the best coordinators in place and trust them implicitly. They don't try and meddle in one thing or the other, but they still have the ultimate say. And I think to bridge that gap between decent football program with good coordinator on the offensive and defensive side and a good special teams coach, good strength and conditioning guy, is, yes, Will Muschamp's strength always was the defensive side of the football. For him to just place so much emphasis on that, we're never going to get anywhere until he steps out of his comfort zone. And I think the last couple of weeks, it seems as though something is at least moving in the right direction now. Whether or not it's translated into a win against Alabama, the answer to that is a flat no. But something seems like it might have changed insofar as Muschamp looked like he had a lot more of a vested interest in the offensive play calling.
Yeah.
Am I wrong, or?
I think the only thing that changed is we have a different quarterback and we have a better quarterback. I mean, I think that makes a world of difference when you have faith in the guy, whether he's a freshman or a senior, when your offensive coordinator has actual faith in the guy to make all the throws. I think that makes all the difference.
Yeah, could be.
That game plan against UNC was not aggressive, and I think it was because they didn't trust Jake to make the throws.
Well, then it makes me question, like, why was he?
I agree with that, and that's a different discussion for a different day. I agree with that. Knowing what we know now, Hilinski should have been starter from
2020.
So. But I'm not sure I can get on board with the Muschamp needs to be more involved with the offense thing. I mean, that's part of the reason he got run off from Florida, is because he was too involved with the offense and they couldn't score points because of it.
That could be.
So I'm not sure I can get on board with that outside of as long as he's going to be I think you need to have an aggressive mindset in fourth and short situations that are in, like, the middle, you know, 25, 30 yards of the field. I think you need to have an aggressive mindset there. And him being the head coach, that's his call. But if he's getting more involved with anything, I think he needs to get more involved with the defense and maybe be his own defensive coordinator, because what we're doing right now on defense, whatever we're doing ain't working. Got gashed against UNC, and I understand Bama is kind of an anomaly because Bama is basically an NFL football team, but I don't know. I think if he needs to get involved, more involved with anything, it's probably the defense and whatever. That's my opinion, and y'all have yours, and that's great. Richard, what's your thoughts on the Bama game?
You know, and Sam, to your point, I think that two things can be true. I think that Coach Muschamp can and probably should take more ownership of the defense.
No, I think he needs to call his own defensive plays every single game. He needs to Steve Spurrier the defense. He needs to have complete ownership of it. Like, all of the ownership.
Fair. And I don't disagree with you in any way, shape,
yeah,
or form.
No, I'm just clarifying, like, from my end, what I meant by that. Because everywhere he's been as a defensive play caller, he's had an elite defense, pretty much, except here. So that's okay. I'm done. I'm gonna stop talking. You go ahead, Richard.
Well, I mean, and part of that could be, it can be a million different reasons. I agree with you in that if Muschamp's going to be the defense guy, then whoever it is that's your defensive coordinator, whether it's T-Rob or whoever the hell it is going forward, is just going to be a place card.
Right.
And it's going to be – Muschamp's going to be woof right there. You know, I mean, for forever, you know, Spurrier had G.A. Mangus as the quarterback's coach. G.A. just – well, we all know how that story unfolded. Spurrier still had pretty fantastic quarterbacks here. I'm going to take a slightly different tack here, and I'm going to start on the defensive side of the football. And it's one is there were three real takeaways for me. And one was that, yes, absolutely, both of y'all have hinted to this, that game – I think it played itself out the exact way that I'm hopeful for the fan base, for the players, because it was a kick in the pants, but it was also not a public shaming. That was a winnable game before halftime. The bounces go the other way. The trust funds set up for each and every single one of SEC officiating's children go away. That game was a 7-point ball game with 10 minutes to go in the football game. Not 47
to
16.
20. Yeah.
16.
Whatever.
That was a winnable football game before halftime. It was a winnable football game after halftime. And up until the end of the fourth quarter of the garbage time, that team hung with ostensibly the second best team in college football. How that goes forward is up to the football team and the coaching staff. One thing that I'm bizarrely confused by is why the hell have we never been able to cover a slant route ever? And I know that Sam, specifically you and I talked about how important safety play was going to be this week. But
well,
is it just me, or have we never been able to cover a receiver in motion across the middle of the field?
What I've always understood is if you're going to play the – and I thought the general plan on defense was sound because they have better athletes than we do, so you can't get up in their face and bump and run them, you know, on the outside all game long because you're going to get burnt. So the idea is keep the ball in front and try to make them kick field goals. And I'm fine with that, okay? But if you're going to do that and you're going to play outside leverage, you need to have linebackers that can cover because the linebackers are going to be the ones that are dropping back and taking away those routes over the middle of the field in the intermediate passing game. And we can't do that. We don't have linebackers, at least against Alabama, that were able to
do that. It just seems to me like we're taking really, really, really bad line.
Well, no, I think this isn't
five stacked receivers on the right side of the football. This isn't super intricate stuff. This is bread and butter football. It's just now Nick Saban has a quarterback that's going to go down in history someplace in the NFL. I think Tua Tagovailoa is probably one of the most talented pocket passers I've ever seen. And to give him the benefit of the doubt across the middle just seems like assisted suicide from a football perspective.
Well, yeah, but the alternative is to play man-to-man with a single high safety and get beat for 80 yards every other pass. So, I mean, I understand it's frustrating, but at some point, you either have the players to shut it down or you don't. And when they've got four first round NFL draft picks arguably playing wide receiver and you've got freshmen playing nickel, you know, the nickelback spot, that's tough. I mean, coaching only does so much. I mean, you got to be better than the other guy across from you. And I mean, I'm not speaking about any game that we've played in the last 4 years other than Saturday. On Saturday, we didn't have the better players. I mean, obviously, that's the obvious statement of the century. But more often than not, especially in a game like football, you got to have the dudes to stop people. And we didn't on Saturday against Bama. And that's just the truth of it. Got to have the dudes. Hang with those guys.
All right, Jimmy's and Joe's, X's and O's, all everything else aside.
Yep.
Let's roll forward. Let's take like the corn moon, the harvest moon, and move forward. Lift up the next day. This week, we travel on the road to Bizarro World, Colombia for some manufactured rivalry that doesn't even exist. What the heck is... Carolina's a 10-point underdog? What the heck? What's going on here? Talk us through this. Alex?
I don't know. It's a weird place to play. Camera angles are weird to watch. Kelly Bryant doesn't look like the same Bryant we faced at that other place. And it's hard to get a read on Mizzou. They got beat by a subpar Wyoming team, and then they trounced two really bad teams. So there's a lot of unknowns for me on both sides of the ball. So I say the Cocks probably win this one by 7-10.
Sam, you want me to defer my little weird interjection here?
You go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, I try as I might, I can't get my head around Missouri at all, and I do not like Columbia, Missouri. All the people that have said snide things about Columbia, South Carolina in the past, that's fine. You've never been to Columbia, Missouri. This has no rhyme. This has no rationale. This has no reason other than this would be a very beneficial thing for the football team this weekend moving forward. Gamecocks win big, 38-14. It's never that close to start with. And I will make a bold prediction that Dak Joyner has one passing touchdown and a receiving touchdown.
I can get on board with that.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
All right. So, you know, I'm kind of with Richard on, I'm kind of with both y'all on this one. Although I feel like this might be a little bit of a shootout. And, you know, there's also the whole thing of the post-Alabama game hangover that seems like literally everybody suffers through. So I'm a little worried about that. But if we can fight through that and not have that bother us, I think our defense can slow Missouri down enough. Because, I mean, obviously they're not near – I mean, they have some talent or whatever, but they're not nearly as talented, especially up front, as Alabama is. I think I could see guys like Javon Kinlaw and DJ Wonnum having a pretty good day against their offensive line. Maybe that's just me being ignorant about their offensive line. I don't know. But, I mean, guys, they beat a really bad West Virginia team in a – I mean, Southeast Missouri by 50. And they lost to Wyoming in the first game of the year. And Wyoming proceeded. They beat Missouri by 6. They beat Texas State.
Lay eggs.
Hold on. They beat Texas State by 9. And they beat Idaho by 5. So it's not like Wyoming is some world beater mid-major team. I mean, Wyoming's a pretty average... pretty average, you know, Mountain West squad. So maybe that game against Wyoming was just kind of one of those one-off weird games where everything just kind of aligned, but they didn't get it done. They didn't beat a very mediocre Wyoming football team. So now in the same breath, we lost to a pretty mediocre North Carolina team. So I think this game is very important for both teams' seasons. Going forward, I think, especially us being 1-2 already, we're kind of at a crossroads here for this season. We really need to win this week. I do think that if we bring the same attitude and the same mindset that we played with against Alabama, I think we go in there and I think we beat these guys. I don't think they're all that good, and they're getting a little overhyped, like they always seem to be right before they play us, for whatever reason. I think Ryan Helinski stays hot. Rico continues to run angry. And I think Feaster gets a big play early in the second half that really swings the game, swings the momentum fully in our favor. And I think we shut up their crowd and we slow their offense down in the second half. Cox win 34-24. That's what I've got.
Okay. All right, then.
Yep. So Richard, you're going to go with the same stinky away uniforms that we played in against UNC, correct?
You cannot wear a new uniform until you win in it. Damn it.
Hey,
that's it.
This all, like I said last week, it's also a good way to get staph infection. Just saying. Alex, what do you have for uniforms?
Garnet, white garnet.
Okay. I'm going to go with garnet, white, black. A little bit of a...
I like that.
Yeah, a little bit of an inverse look of that throwback uniform we had a couple weeks ago against Charleston Southern. And when I say garnet, yeah. I mean the one with the white circle and the block C on the helmet, okay? Not the script garnet. Yeah, like the throwback garnet helmet with the white shirt and the black pants. I think that looks, that would look very sharp in my humble, but also not so humble opinion.
You said it, not me.
I know. I'm admitting to it. X-Factor player of the game. X-Factor player of the game. Alex.
I think our secondary is going to have to play much, much better every game from now on if we really want to have a chance. You know, we've got to tackle a little bit better, and we've just got to cover on the short routes a little bit better than we have been.
I mean, everybody's always known that this season is going to hinge on those, not necessarily 50-50 games, but pretty much every single game other than the quote-unquote unwinnables are going to be those 50-50 matchups. And I think that the big deal in those 50-50 matchups is always and will forever be the defensive secondary. And after Sam's comments earlier, I think that this is going to be appreciated a little bit. The X-Factor player is going to be Jam Williams.
And you know what, Richard? Nothing would please me more to see that. I would love to see that.
Because, and for the entire, like, for the entire Gamecock football nation, the reason why I'm picking him is because this has to be his put up or shut up moment.
Yeah,
that's
and,
it.
And don't get what I said earlier misconstrued.
It's your five stars.
I like it. I like the kid, okay? Like, don't get what I said earlier misconstrued here. I like the kid. I want him to succeed, but right now he's not playing well. And if you don't play well at this level, you shouldn't get playing time. I mean, this isn't Little League. This is major college football. If you don't play well, you need to be benched. So, like you said, I agree with you. I think he should get limited time this weekend, and if he continues to get exposed, that limited time needs to become more limited.
It goes hand in hand with, like, for example, and don't take this the wrong way, with Ryan Helinski and Jake Bentley. All right, you've got some problems. Yes, none of us are going to know 100% the answer to when did he get hurt, how hurt was he when he played North Carolina, like whatever it was, blah, blah, blah. Jake Bentley's a really fine young man and a really good football player. Ryan Helinski comes in and has success. The same exact thing comes into play. If you've got somebody that's there that can make the plays that you can't, there's no reason why they shouldn't be there. Or vice versa, if there is a reason why, and now I'm looking at Jam Williams specifically on this one with regard to what I was talking about earlier, it seemed like he was off. It seems like he's been off since he got injured last year. If you're off, you're off. It ain't your fault. You're just off. It's time for the next person to take the place.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with Ryan Helinski. I think he keeps his hot start going. And I think he takes advantage of the fact that he got to play a team like Alabama in his first SEC game, and now he gets to play a team, he gets to play Missouri, and I think he has a big day against the Missouri Tigers in Bizarro World, Columbia, and leads the Gamecocks to victory. We have three Twitter questions, if y'all are ready for that.
Are we ever ready for anything?
No, but are y'all ready for Twitter questions?
Yes.
Okay, so Spurs Up for Harambe. That's a great Twitter name. says,
"Oh, remember Harambe."
He says, "Am I way off base thinking that Helsinki just looks overall better than Bentley did in his first few starts? Helsinki seems decisive and calm." And then he says, "Also, question for at SEC officiating, why are you the way that you are?"
But Alex, you first.
I mean, like, I definitely think Helsinki looks a little bit better. I think there's no question overall talent-wise, he's just got a little bit more in his freshman year than Bentley did. And so I don't think it's, you know, your eyes are playing tricks on you or anything like that. I think he actually is a better quarterback. I just think overall he's a little bit of a better talent. He does appear to me as well to be a little bit calmer. It seems like when he's sitting in the pocket, his eyes are downfield and he moves well in the pocket. I think he may just be a little bit more talented, which is what you hope for each subsequent recruit. You hope for a little bit more talent. So,
yeah, I don't think anybody can really argue that Helsinki as a freshman looks better than Bentley did as a freshman. I don't see freshman Jake Bentley putting up over 300 yards of passing against a team like Alabama. So, Richard, you got anything on that?
You know, it's one of those things where, like, I feel like I'm in that situation where I tell my daughter not to stand up and eat her food in the middle of the living room while I stand up and eat my food in the middle of the living room. It's almost like I'm trying to, like, scold the unscoldable behavior. But Alex isn't wrong in that it's something about his talent level. It's okay. I can both say that Jake Bentley was a stepping stone for this program. Right now, he can still be an integral part of the program once he gets healthy, if he so chooses to be. The way that the college football game is moving, that kid, and I mean specifically Ryan Helsinki, that kid has something.
So, yes.
I'm going to stop short of remarkable, but he's got something.
He's different. He just carries himself differently. The ball comes differently off his hands.
That ball floats, but it's not high. The ball, I don't know. He throws a pretty ball, man. He throws a pretty ball. And no shade on Jake Bentley ever. No shade on Connor Shaw. No shade on Steven Garcia. No shade on any of our other friends of the pod. He throws a pretty ball that I haven't seen in a little while, especially not wearing garnet black. Throws a pretty ball, dude.
Okay, so the last Twitter question, and this is where I'm going to get into my officiating thing a little bit, but so y'all go ahead and give a quick answer. One, did DC3 make it to the third quarter before breaking out the bourbon?
Yes.
And then, has everyone else also given up hoping the SEC officials will call a decent game? By the end of the game, I was even calling out bad officiating from Alabama's perspective, and that question is from Chuck Hendricks.
To answer the first part of the question, I did not have a drop of bourbon yesterday.
Okay, but have y'all given up on good officiating from SEC officials?
Yes.
I've really given up on good officiating from any group of officials, yeah. SEC or otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with that. So this is where I'm going to get into this a little bit, and maybe it doesn't carry as much weight now that NFL officials are seemingly making mistake after mistake every single week. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Saints fan. I'm saying that because I see it all over the place every single week in the NFL. But I got curious this afternoon, and I looked up just what college officials make, like, in a salary or stipend basis. And they only get paid for – these are, like, Power 5 conference officials. This is not their full-time job. They get paid $2,500 to $3,000 per game. But they're also paying for their own travel expenses out of pocket. So after taxes, this is according to Saturday Down South, after taxes and expenses, a college official is likely to pocket something like $15,000 per year.
So basically a real estate agent.
Well, yeah, I guess. But my point is, they're not getting year-round training. They're not... It's not a full-time job. And then they're expected to go officiate these games that, especially at the SEC level, that are played by kids that are going to be playing in the NFL in a year. And I just don't think that that's... Look, Power 5 conferences have enough money to go around to make officiating these guys full-time jobs. And they're not attracting top talent to be referees by saying, hey, go make $3,000 a game and pay out of pocket your own traveling expenses. So my thing is, if you want to get better officiating and you actually want to be committed to having high-quality football and high-quality refereeing, you need to make – or higher quality, you need to make this a full-time gig for these referees so they can get full year-round training – all that stuff. And I'm not saying it is a perfect solution, but I don't think that they're putting these guys in a position to succeed as officials. And I'm also not making excuses for them. That doesn't change the fact that they suck at what they do at the college level. So that's my little rant about officials.
Which is insane, because when you look at data from the Wall Street Journal, the average entry level job would make $51,000 in the year 2019.
Yeah. So these guys, they're basically officiating these games because they love football. And that's great if you're officiating Division II, Division III, and high school level football. But this is a multi-million dollar industry at the Power 5 level. Okay, so conferences need to commit the money, and don't tell me, nobody can tell me they don't have the money. With all these TV contracts that are around these days, these conferences have too much money. They have so much money they don't know what to do with it. They have the money to make officiating a full-time gig for these guys, to put them through training and keep them sharp year-round. And all those things you see at the professional level with NBA officials and NFL officials and Major League umpires. And we still see how bad those guys are at what they do. So, but at least if you put these guys through all that stuff, maybe it'd be a little bit better. I don't know. But there's not a commitment from the conferences to having good officiating. And you can't convince me otherwise that there is.
I don't have a good argument. I don't. I mean, I kind of did a mini... pissed off the refs a minute ago, but no, I don't have anything else good for that. You hit the nail on the head. Let's beat the hell out of Missouri.
Please.
Can we do that? Just for fantastic. You, me, the Gipper, the guy that makes subs at Publix, and doesn't complain, gives you a couple extra chicken tenders just because. Let's do it because it feels good. Guys, something that we didn't talk about that I want to just briefly touch on and then move forward with. The third quarter moment of silence, call it what it is, for Ryan's brother Tyler.
Yeah, that was cool. That needs to become an every game tradition for us. That was cool.
I 100% agree.
That needs to become our version of the Iowa fans waving at the kids in the cancer hospital behind their stadium. That needs to become our version of that.
To hell with holding the fist up in the fourth quarter. Let's hold up three fingers at the beginning of the third.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And for anybody that doesn't know or didn't get to see it, it was featured on game day this week, and then it will also be in a longer format on ESPN or E60. Is that what they're calling it? Is it E60 or ESPN 60 Sports Center? I don't know what it is.
One of their special documentary type shows.
E60, I think what it is. It's in a couple of weeks. Anyhow, this world of college football is frustrating. This world of college football is frenetic. It's exciting. But at the end of the day, it's about people. And there's some really neat people that are either here or not here anymore. Tyler Helinski is one of those people that we need to understand that every single throw that Ryan Helinski makes from here on out has a little bit of Tyler involved in. Just the same way we remember people that are not in our lives anymore. We can bitch about officiating. We can talk about this thing, that thing, the other. At the end of the day, what brings us together with college football is the fact that it's pretty damn fun. And it helps us forget all that other crap that isn't quite so savory. Gamecocks kickoff against will be there. Drive safe, go Cox. Don't ever forget to tip your waitress.